We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, the Nets are back, and they're back with another win over the Boston Celtics, 121-109. How are we feeling?
Kyrie Andrew Irving.
Kyrie was in his bag tonight. I think he's averaging something like 39 points per game against his former team. I think it was 40 tonight, 38 in the first matchup. So Kyrie was cooking. Nets got the W. But as always, you can find the Buzz on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But Jack, should we start with the first quarter rust?
Yeah, what was up with that, Nick? It seemed to me that the All-Star break, I mean, both teams were coming off an All-Star break. Both teams had two All-Stars playing in that game as well. Doc Rivers trying to do some sneaky things, getting our boys in those extended minutes. But at the same time, do you think that it was on both teams? Do you think it was more on the Nets side? What was going wrong? Was it just missing shots? Was it bad shots? Was it bad defense? Combination of all the factors. What are your thoughts on that first quarter?
Yeah, I think it was Russ. I think more players were impacted, you know, than others. You know what I mean? I felt like James Harden was rusty in this one, especially to start. Just some turnovers, going to some double teams, passes just kind of slightly off, and obviously missed a couple shots he normally makes. So I think, you know, maybe he had a little bit too much fun in the All-Star break. I'm not really sure. Kyrie obviously got his thing going on a little bit later in the game, but still not a super hot start for him. And I think Jaylen Brown on the other side had a pretty rough shooting night, 5 of 23, 3 of 12 from 3 for Jaylen Brown. So I guess both teams were probably really impacted by it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is going to be a game we're looking back on with really sort of great fondness. Funnily enough, you know, just to provide a little bit of an anecdote, there was one of the students that I teach came up and said, "Ah, Mr. Jack, I need some basketball highlights." I'm like, "All right, we got the three-point contest from Joe Harris. We got Kyrie Irving shots." And it was just a bit of fun. But we got plenty of those highlights from Kyrie Irving tonight, Nick. And, you know, he really got us going. You know, an absolutely incredible performance, as you alluded to. 40 points, 8 boards, 3 dimes, steal, block, 5-8 from 3, 5-5 from the line, 15-23 from the field, all in 34 minutes. There is rank for me, where does Kyrie Irving rank for you, Nick, as watchability? You know, there's Steph Curry going off, there's Damian Lillard going off. We're Nets fans, so we're probably going to have a little bit of subjective bias, but we also love this game and we love all the players in it. Where does Kyrie Irving and his wizardry and mastery of this sport rank for you as a viewing experience?
I mean, when he's on, there's not really many players you'd rather watch. You know what I mean? Like, when he's in locked in mode, like he was in the third quarter of this game, it's just like you don't think he's gonna miss. Even when his shots are like a little bit off in terms of the mechanics, it's like, oh, this is kind of still gonna go down, or it's a weird angle or something, and it's just like boom. So I think watchability is probably 10 when he's locked in. Just in general, I would say probably be 9 out of 10, right? Like, he's just that good all the time. Even his bad nights, he'll squeeze in a couple highlights.
Yeah, no doubt. He's one of the more what it's again, we are gifted to be able to watch him on a night by night basis. And it seems to me he always brings that little bit extra against his opposing teams and with good measure. You know, he was having a bit of fun in the post game, sort of saying like, oh, yeah, I'm always shit talking to my teammates and such. But we also saw the rounds where we saw the Marcus Smart interview from the Jump a couple of years ago. And we saw Rachel Nichols basically trying to cut him off because he was saying too many nice things about one of our idols. So, yeah, look.
Even recently at All-Star Weekend, he was hanging out with Jason Tatum's son, chasing him around the court.
Such wholesome content, man. My heart couldn't handle that. My ovaries were just about to explode watching that shit. It was absolutely gorgeous. And then we also saw, like, you know, him and James Harden fighting for the inbounds and Stephen Curry saying, hey, man, you already started this now. I thought you were the shooting guy. That was a good fun as well. The sound bites for me what make All-Star Weekend. Yep. And while Kyrie Irving didn't give us many of them because he was just doing his own thing, and you can tell he didn't want to be there, but he was providing the best experience for the viewers and also honoring the late, great Kobe Bryant. But tonight, it was the Kyrie Irving show, Nick. And, you know, James Harden didn't have his best game, but you have the luxury of having the best backcourt in the league, one of the best shooting guards in the league. And it's just, they feed off each other. And it's, if one of them is having a bad game, the other one definitely isn't. I don't think it's happened in the 25 games or so that we've seen these two together. Both of them have a poor game.
Yeah, and like you said, Jack, that's really the luxury of having multiple stars. You know what I mean? And obviously the Nets have three. Kevin Durant is obviously out right now, but when he's in...
One Landry Shamet as well, Nick. It doesn't hurt to have him in it.
I mean, and then they have like these star role players that really can pop off too, like a Landry Shamet, like a Joe Harris, like getting hot from three. We'll touch on those guys later. But again, to the superstar stuff, it's just like they're probably not both going to be off. You know what I mean? And one's having a bad game, the other one's at least going to have a pretty good game. And typically that's enough when you're a top 15 player, top 10 player, top 5 player, and, you know, James Harden, Kevin Durant's case. So it's just incredible to kind of watch. And you could tell James Harden knew he was a little off and kind of let Kyrie shoulder the load. And like you said, going against his former team, it's like, whenever he has like Jason Tatum one-on-one, he's always trying to do something special. Like with that layup that he finished on him in transition, the angle really didn't make any sense. And the way he finished it didn't make any sense either, but it was boom. And he was just in that point where you felt like he was making every single shot.
Jason Tatum like tackled him. It was like Aussie rules football. I'm like, how is there not a foul in that? And I mean, look, on the other end, Jalen Brown.
We had two refs tonight. They're missing the third one.
Yeah, I mean, it was stupid. It was stupid. I know you pointed it out on Twitter, and there were some decisions that left you scratching your head a little bit, but also on the other end of the floor to provide a semblance of objective bias. Kyrie Irving definitely fouled Jalen Brown on that three. Yep. He hit his hand arm super duper hard, but it was going both ways. I guess it's sort of like a quote unquote makeup call. But yeah, it's a you know, you copy and paste it, just the admiration that we show for Kyrie Irving, and he's just like, you know, I'm going to get this team on my back. He has a real sense for the occasion, whether it's national TV, former teams, whatever it is. You know Kyrie Irving is going to step up if, you know, the lights are bright. And, you know, we heard MVP chants as well. I've heard people sort of make an argument that Kyrie Irving is as big a candidate as James Harden for the MVP. They've both been incredible, and you could certainly... I think it's almost like the Golden State Warriors of old. They take votes away from each other when you have, you know, Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry, two of the best players ever, and you've got Kyrie Irving and James Harden, two of the best modern players ever. They're just going to take votes from each other, and ultimately, I don't think either of them care about the individual awards. I mean, some of the media, with the way that they were treating Kyrie Irving at the start of the season, they're probably not going to give him votes for anything anyway, but he has been absolutely goddamn incredible. The 50-40-90 season might be back upon us. He is a goddamn masterpiece in every sense of the word, Nick. Kyrie Irving, can't say enough.
Yeah, I would say this, Jack. I think, like, since we watch every game, we recap every game, I think Kyrie has, like, higher peaks, but he has lower lows than James Harden. So, like, the stats look kind of similar, but I think James Harden is kind of more of the consistent force, and obviously some of his impact doesn't show up in the stat sheet. But just to shout out Kyrie, too, I felt like he was making a lot of high-effort plays in this game, you know, getting back in transition, trying to get some of those loose balls. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. 8 boards, Nick, you know, and 2 offensive boards. I think... I wasn't able to watch closely enough. I was watching on an iPhone XS or whatever the heck the model is. But did you see, did he still have the bandage on his finger?
I did not see it. I wasn't definitely looking closely, and if he did have it, it wasn't as big as it was.
Yeah, I think it certainly wasn't as noticeable. I was in some group chats and trying to sort of spot it myself as I was watching the game, but it certainly didn't look like it. And we did say heading into the All-Star break that he was making more of those effort plays to make up for, you know, a bit of inefficiency yep. from the field. And inefficient for Kyrie Irving is like 45% compared to 60% and having an incredible season in true shooting. We know that across the board for this roster. So it seems to me that the shot looked cleaner
yep.
and just more like Kai. And if that makes any sense,
it just looked more comfortable too on the release. Like it just like he looked more confident taking the shot, and everything was kind of going down. And also give him credit too, is he got to his spots. You know what I mean? Right under the free throw line. Like if he's in that area, like he's just gonna make it. You know, right above the restricted area. Like it's
that's
just money.
Move on Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown is one of the best defensive players in the league. Best one-on-one defensive players in the league, especially on guards. You know, he's strong. He's better against the sort of 1-2s to a certain extent, the 3s, the guys that aren't the LeBron Jameses of the world. But the way that Kyrie Irving's just like, you know what? I've got this spot. I'm going to be able to create space no matter what. You know, he's a dancer. Like, he literally is. He just spins. I think that the fluidity in his kinetic motion, not to get all analytical about it, but what I mean by that is his footwork and his body control is unparalleled. There are a few players in the history of this game that have the body control every single space on the floor. We call him a three-level scorer in so many different ways, Nick, but it's the ability to create shots at three levels. Like you mentioned, that layup on Jason Tatum was just stupid. His three ball, you know, whether he's taking it as a pull-up, whether he's taking it as a sidestep, or whether he's just around that mid-range where he's just like, you know what, I'm going to get some space here. I'm going to read it off the glass here. It's just, he's an absolute just physician. He just tears the game apart.
Yeah, I mean, the connection between just, like, the mental and the body, you know what I mean? It's so in sync. And then also, like you said, the body control and the footwork, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of the players can get the movements down, but their body doesn't necessarily go in sync in the way his does. Just everything looks so comfortable all the time. So, like, we've spoken a lot, said a lot this season, like, it's just a joy to watch him play. Like, it's just constant highlights on a regular basis, and there's enough highlights in the second half or some guy's first half of the season.
Definitely, and fingers and toes crossed that some Buzz listeners, you as well, Nick, might be lucky enough to get to a game sooner rather than later. Hopefully, you know, the prices remain at somewhat of an affordable yep. price for all the Nets fans out there. But, you know, seeing Kyrie Irving has been one of the joys of my life, and I'd kill to see him again. And hopefully we get those vaccines rolling down here yep. in Australia soon and might be able to get on the flight and get to Barclays. It'll be the first thing that I'll be wanting to do. I can't wait for it. But in saying that, Nick, there seemed to be, I guess, we always rave about the starters, but it seemed to me that the balance was off. And do you think that was the clutter between DJ and Bruce Brown?
Yeah, I do. I put out a tweet about that. I think Boston's one of the more intelligent defenses you're going to face. You know, Brad Stevens willing to make that adjustment. And at times they just understood, like, hey, we just rotated enough time. Like, we're going to force Bruce Brown into a tough shot. Bruce's, you know, floater wasn't necessarily on. They did a good job limiting DJ on some of those oops, some of those rolls to the rim. Also, credit to just them having more size. You know what I mean? Like a Jason Tatum, a Jaylen Brown, and then also playing too big. So it just made it a little bit more difficult. And with James Harden being off and his three ball not there, I feel like Boston was able to capitalize on that.
Yeah, look, I've got a lot of respect for Boston. I've said this, I think, on the last fan pod that we did, that I can't help. I hate the fan base, or I hate a lot of the fan base. You know, everyone except for at Celtics Lab, basically. But in saying that, the way that they play and their individual talent that they have, you know, they're incredibly intelligent and savvy team, as you did allude to, Nick. You know, the ability to just close gaps and make the shots harder and just condense the floor, because Bruce Brown works best when he's in space, whether it's alongside a Jeff Green, maybe to an extent Nicholas Claxton, because he can play five out, even though he hasn't taken them yet. He has the ability to be like, I'll stand here, I'm comfortable, I'll take it if I need to. Whereas DJ has to be in the dunker spot. Bruce Brown kind of has to be in that sort of same spot as well. It was just a little bit clunky at times, and I think that it worked best when, you know, we had Uncle Jeff back, who we can't say enough good things about Jeff Green. We'll probably get to him in a little bit, but I think that was, you know, look, a worthwhile experiment to an extent, because we also saw the Celtics themselves have Tice and Thompson. Tice can hit the three ball a little bit. Thompson, obviously, more likely to be that sort of DJ type, but has probably some, I guess, more comfortable and switchability that DJ does have. But yeah, I think that they forced the Nets into changing rather than sort of the Nets doing it the opposite way, which was good coaching by Brad Stevens and quality execution by their players.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, that Joe Harris was a little off in the first half in terms of his three-point shots. That doesn't help.
When you have, I think, as well, saying that, Nick, sorry to interrupt, but when you have DJ and Bruce Brown out there, you replace that with Jeff Green, immediately it's just like you're essentially five out, except for Bruce Brown. And Bruce Brown has hit the three-ball pretty damn well. I can't remember if he's been like 40% plus over a span of games, because he just takes the right shots. Didn't take... he only took the one tonight, which he did miss. And obviously, when James Harden isn't hitting his three-ball either, it just felt to me, you know, not the best three-point shooting performance overall, but still went 45% from there because Kyrie Irving was just incredible. But it was basically just James Harden and Landry Shamet leading the team. But I just thought that it's worth sort of testing these different things because, you know, against the Bucks or against the Sixers or against the Lakers, you want to try size, you want to try physicality. And I don't think the Celtics are the right matchup for that, despite the fact that Tyson Thompson, you know, are those sort of guys on paper that look like they have the extra size. This might work on different occasions, but tonight it just didn't. And I don't think it hurt the Nets so much. I thought the Nets were able to adjust at points, be that from the team, be that from Steve Nash. James Harden is finding guys in open spaces. He still had eight dimes himself. I still thought the Nets did make some decent enough adjustments despite those limitations.
Yeah, I think it was still good enough essentially to win the game, obviously. And this isn't even like your go-to starting lineup, like you said. You know, Kevin Durant is still out. You know, Kevin Durant is still out. Like, that's who he's going to swap in for. And no disrespect to Bruce Brown or DeAndre Jordan. You know, at best, these guys are starting level players. You know what I mean? And KD's arguably, you know, the best player in the league, top three, top five, whatever you want to say. And he's going to help you on both ends of the floor. So it's not really an issue you have to worry about too much. Obviously, you know, we expect Kevin Durant to be back at some point here. And like you said, you know, you swap in Jeff Green, even for Bruce Brown, if you swapped in Jeff Green, it just gives you another three-point shooter. So I think Steve Nash could have maybe adjusted a little bit more in game, but it's fine. I think he also just wanted to see this group kind of get through some of, you know, the speed bumps out there. But the second unit, I think one of the reasons they had success is they're just more talented than Boston's second unit. You know what I mean? And the fact that they can keep a star on the floor, it just allows them to kind of run over teams.
Life is too short to sleep between anything less than really nice sheets. But maybe you looked at some of the retailers and calculated the years of interest you'd pay on just one set and gave up. Trust me, go check out brooklinen.com. So Brooklinen was started by Rich and Vicky, who also tried to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg. And when they couldn't find them, they founded Brooklinen as the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without the luxury-level markups. Brooklinen has a variety of sheets, colors, patterns, and materials to fit your needs and taste. And Brooklinen is so much more than sheets. They've got comforters, pillows, towels, and even loungewear, and more. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code BACKBOARD to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more. Plus, free shipping. That's brooklinen.com and enter promo code BACKBOARD to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more. brooklinen.com and use promo code BACKBOARD at checkout.
Look, Jeff Green plus 18, Nicholas Claxton plus 10, Tyler Johnson plus 6, Landry Shamet plus 21. It was the bench that got us this win tonight, Nick, or at least gave us the boost and the push and the juice, as you like to sort of say, to sort of get us that momentum. And look, it was Jeff Green with his moments and his three ball, 2 or 4 from there, had a couple of dimes as well. Nicholas Claxton just showing incredible defensive effort. You know, he got a couple of points here or there. He's a really good rebounder as well. Got caught a couple of times with the strength of Marcus Smart and some other players, but those are things that he'll learn from. You put out a fantastic clip, and you know Matt Brooks of Nets Daily also has done a really good video on YouTube, and we know how just sound he is defensively, just in his motion, Nick. We sort of, you're talking about Kyrie Irving offensively, and it's just sort of just like pure and smooth. There's a similar, you can make an argument that Nicholas Claxton has that element of smoothness and fluidity on the defensive end.
Yeah, it's just natural. It's just very instinctual. You know what I mean? I think also someone commented on the clip that you mentioned that I posted that, like, he was ready for Jason Tatum's sidestep three. Actually, it was our guy Chandler from OTG. He was ready for that. You know what I mean? As a young player, like, typically your scouting report on some of these guys isn't there. It felt like Claxton was ready and knew what to kind of expect in that situation, or maybe it's just a reaction speed. And we saw him get beat a couple times in this game, but the recovery speed is really there. And that's what's going to be important, because guys are going to hit tough shots. As long as you're putting up a contest and making them earn it, that's all what it's all about.
And look, there were times you have to give away the foul, but ultimately that's a good decision as well. You're not letting the guy get the bucket, give away a somewhat physical foul too. So I almost like it that we are getting mistakes, because that is what you truly learn from. It can't be all 33 points in 31 minutes and 17 boards and just having perfect performances in the time that he's playing. I like the way he's being used. He's still a net positive. His hair's looking great. His style is awesome. The smile is goddamn gorgeous. We can't say enough good things about Nicholas Claxton, and he's only going to grow. The young alchemist is only going to keep getting wiser and wiser, learning from these dudes. And whether it's adding another big and such, and, you know, he's got Amari, he's got DJ to learn from the sort of verticality and the lob threats. He's got Blake Griffin now to sort of learn from too. I think Nicholas Claxton is only going to be a greater performer and only improve as the season does go on. You know, I want to see him... I want to see the 25-minute mark for him. Not at this stage. I think his conditioning is still being worked into. But around that sort of 60-game mark, and where we sort of go, okay, let's see and try and solidify this rotation here, because Claxton can give you that. You know, DeAndre had 27 minutes tonight. Jeff Green had 25. And Nicholas Claxton had 18. All of them had their positives and their negatives. But ultimately, Nicholas Claxton is, I've said this a million times, similar to what Robert Williams gives to the Boston Celtics defensively, he is a floor raiser. And they are different players, because Robert Williams is one of the best shot blockers in the league, and jump shooting shot blockers in the league. Similar to like a Zion Williamson in college, similar to like a Mitchell Robinson in the early points of the NBA. He was blocking James Harden on jumpers and stuff. Nicholas Claxton is a different athlete and a different defender, but it doesn't mean he's any less impactful because he doesn't get those counting stats.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that he's more impactful than Robert Williams already in terms of just the ability to switch. And I think Robert Williams is a really talented player. He just has some areas he needs to improve. But getting back to Clax, even the dunk he had in this game was impressive. Robert Williams, actually, funny enough, was the one trying to block it, hit him with a little pump on that and threw it down. Like, he's literally probably the only Nets player that can do that. You know what I mean? Maybe Kevin Durant can do that still, but Clax just has that athleticism and that pop. And like you said, it's going to be intriguing to see how much Steve Nash is going to use him moving forward with Blake Griffin coming in. It was nice to see him still get minutes tonight. And you know what I mean? With Jeff Green being back, going with that Jeff Green and Nick Claxton second unit, you know, front court combo.
Oh, it's a luxury. It's probably the best version of our front court, to be fair. They outplayed Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan quite convincingly. So it's a goddamn luxury to have those sort of guys. I mean, Bruce Brown is the center guard, as I like to say. But tonight it wasn't there for him, but that's fine, because, you know, there are going to be ups and downs and there are going to be nights. And I think, again, some of it was the coaching and the decisions with the lineups. But yeah, in saying that, with Claxton, Nick, he's just continuing to grow and continuing to improve. And I think that, do you think that the Nets are lucky that he was injured to start the season? And do you think that he could be a Houston Rocket if we had have seen, you know, a healthy Claxton and a healthy Clax City at the early points of the 2020-2021 season?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Nets are lucky he wasn't in the bubble and he was still recovering from that shoulder injury, because a real opportunity for him to pop. I think he would have been like the talk of the bubble, probably, just because he would have came out of nowhere and probably put up some nice numbers. I'm not saying he's a perfect player or anything, but he just has that type of pop to him. So I think you're right, Jack. If he was playing, he would be in Houston right now. There's really no question about it. Or he'd be in Cleveland or Indiana or one of the other spots, because he's just a talented player. And it's a real luxury to have a guy of this talent with the amount of first-round picks going out. You know what I mean? Given he's only, 20 years old or 21 years old? Like, there's a lot of talent there with Nick Claxton, and we're just touching the surface here.
Yeah, look, we are now seeing also the national media attention for some of the guys that we love, you know, beyond the Brooklyn buzz. be it Bruce Brown, you know, Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe falling in love with him. He's ours, guys. He's ours. He belongs to us. He's a Brooklyn Buzz
stan. We liked him before the season started.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, Nicholas Claxton the same. We're hearing on Ringer podcast, you know, them dissecting every little frame of his game and what he's been doing this season. And look, those guys are incredibly intelligent. What they analyzed was pretty damn good. I liked what they touched on, Nick. I'm not sure if you heard the pod, but Claxton's size, increased size just coming into his second season, seems to be having an impact because, like you mentioned with that dunk, he was slight as hell last year, as any rookie is. You know, you look back to Jared Allen in seasons past, but Claxton looks strong even though he still is filling into himself and filling into his body.
Yeah, I think 1 year with, you know, an NBA training staff, you know, a performance team, they're just going to get your body in a lot better shape. And I think just it's not always something you can see. Obviously, you can sometimes see the physical gain, but a lot of the time that helps bigs is the core work and the leg work. You know what I mean? And for Jared Allen, it's not like the upper body got really big. I think he just got stronger in the core. He got stronger in his lower body. And that's what gives you the support. You know what I mean? Because you're trying to bounce with bodies down low. And he's never going to be a giant guy. Just he doesn't have the frame to be one. And I think that'll be fine because he also just has some of that, like, underrated skinny guy toughness. Like, you just see it with basketball players sometimes, like, they just have that extra little, like, I'm gonna get this ball. And Clax has that, and like you said, he looks more comfortable and he looks more stable out there, and like I said, probably related to core and leg work.
Yeah, and that obviously helps him incredibly defensively as well, Nick.
Yep.
Because, you know, he has such incredible lateral quickness and the ability to move on a dime. You know, he can change direction so damn quickly, and he has good recovery speed as well. You know, again, I'm not saying that he was perfect tonight. If anything, after the last couple of games, this was a poor performance from Clax, but we're judging him with incredibly high standards. Still plus 10 on the night, still incredibly impactful in whatever he does out there. And that's what you want from a bench player. If you're getting this out of a bench big, I think there are plenty of teams out there that would be loving to have a Nicholas Claxton off the bench right now because he is a first-round talent. You know, we got him with pick 31, which is essentially a first-round pick. But like you mentioned and Dalton mentioned when we chatted to him, this guy's a lottery talent, and the Nets are lucky to have him.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible to see his growth throughout the rest of the season, how he fits in with Blake Griffin. Obviously, Kevin Durant coming back. I think the minutes are going to be tough. It'll be interesting to see what happens to DJ's minutes because I think at this point, Claxton provides you a lot of different elements. Obviously, there's some things that DJ does better. He's a veteran. He has that bigger body, that inside presence, and you know, probably a better shot blocker maybe at this point. But Clax does a lot of different things and provides versatility really on both ends because he's still very comfortable with the ball and driving to the lane, and DJ just doesn't have that. So it's going to be an interesting rotation moving down.
Yeah, and look, you know, we talked about lack of depth, and now that the Nets are having these problems, and you know, we're
almost too much depth.
Yeah, and then you're adding maybe an Andre Drummond as well. You know, we're hearing rumors around that. It's the Lakers or the Nets. There's a part of me that just wants to get him, just so then the Lakers don't. I've said that before when it comes to sort of trades and buyouts, because Blake Griffin was also linked to the Lakers, and now, while obviously I don't think Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin are going to swing the title in the Nets' favor, it does also take the asset and the player away from the other team. And it means that their depth is shallower. And it just gives you options, like you alluded to, Nick. And it'll be fun to sort of see all of this sort of come together. And I mean, you add in your best player as well. It doesn't hurt too. But who else did you want to touch on with the bench, Nick? It seems to me, about to say, this is... It's taken us this long to get to Landry Shamet, and it's probably his best ever game as a Brooklyn Net.
Yeah, I mean, he was locked in tonight, Jack. He hit his first three threes, and it just felt like he was hitting every shot the rest of the night. He was only 6-9. I swear I only saw him miss one. He just was looking really confident out there. I thought defensively he was competing. So, you know, credit to Shamet, and maybe this is a start of a hot streak for him. You know, he started the season a little bit slow, and obviously, you know, shooters can be impacted by confidence more than other players. So this could be the right start for him, and maybe we're going to see a different Landry Shamet for the second half.
Definitely. You know, I think his consistency and impact in terms of what he does is out there. You know, we're seeing it. You know, he's getting those good shots with James Harden in the second unit. He's just taking them. He's got the confidence. He's hitting the shots that matter. There was a point in the game where, you know, the Nets were ice cold, and the leading scorer in the second quarter was Landry freaking Shamet. Without him, you know, that second quarter where the Nets go 35-26 and get that 9-point advantage, a lot of that was Landry.
Yeah, he's the only player that didn't start the game with rust. You know what I mean? Yep. And he was also, you know, pretty important in keeping the game close before the Nets turned it on. So Shamet was that spark that we really wanted him to be. We saw kind of flashes of that at the end of the first half of the season. Like I said, maybe this is something new. And if they have another added element to their team, that could be somebody that could just like pop off and hit a couple threes off the bench. That's just scary, especially because James Harden wasn't even on tonight and feeling his game to the highest extent. We know how good he is in finding shooters. So if Shamet can get cooking and he's playing a lot of minutes with Harden in that second unit, it's going to be another problem.
Look, last 10 games, he's shooting over nearly 39% from three, which is his, you know, around his career average yep. of 39.3. So he's back. You know, he needed to work his way into it. We were sort of talking about it, that we had a semblance of confidence in it because, you know, this isn't an Allen Crabbe sort of situation. I immediately upon his arrival, I'm like, yes, Landry Shamet, I think this guy can give us something. The enthusiasm, the desire, the motivation, you know, he's chatting to people on Twitter here or there. I always had faith in it, Nick. And, you know, I'm not going to toot my own horn here, but yeah, I'm loving seeing Sadiq Bey do his thing as well. But I think Landry Shamet could be a bigger swing factor because, like you alluded to, when it comes to postseason performances and you need a hot quarter and you get, you know, 6 of 9 from three performance for Landry Shamet, that can win you a game against the Los Angeles Lakers, the Clippers, the Utah Jazz, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Philadelphia 76ers. That level of shooting and that level of confidence and that flamethrower shot, that can win you a game, Nick.
Yeah, and I think he's getting more comfortable defensively in the switching scheme and, you know, using some of those effort plays to kind of fight over, you know, different players or whatever it is. And then obviously he still has his issues occasionally defensively. But like you said, Jack, maybe he's not getting a lot of playoff minutes. Maybe he's in there for like 6 to 8 minutes in a game, but he could literally knock down 4 threes. And like you said, that could be the factor that changes the game. And he just complements Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant so well. You know what I mean? It's like having just a lesser version of Joe Harris in terms of the spacing impact. Like he provides a lot, not to level Joe does, but it's just like, okay, we can still run similar stuff on our offense because we always have one of these guys out there.
I mean, you had more minutes than him tonight. You had more minutes than Joe Harris probably for the first time, you know, this season. I could say that with confidence. And part of it was Joe's, you know, lack of impact on the scoreboard early on. But it was also just because Landry Shamet was one of our best players tonight. You know, yep. I think outside of Kyrie Irving, obviously James Harden had a really nice performance himself. We've dived deep into that. I think Landry Shamet was the second most important performer in this game, Nick.
Yeah, he really was. I think that's a fair, you know, fair assessment, Jack, just because he hit those big threes, he kept the momentum going. And it just, like I said, defensively, I thought he really fought and just other guys didn't have it. And he had it from the start in this one.
Definitely. Definitely. Let's get to Joe, Nick, because Marcus Smart, does anyone have his address? If you do, hit me up in the DMs at the JMN JBT. The way he's jumping on my man. Now, there are only a few people in this world. In fact, there's only one person in this world that's allowed to jump on Joe Harris like that. And I'll let you fill in the blanks, ladies and gentlemen, with what's there. And people are scratching him. I mean, I'm not going to say anything about scratching and other things that might happen behind the scenes, but no one should be scratching Joe Harris unless it's me.
Yeah, I mean, he did look pretty beat up, Jack. And I mean, Marcus Smart, like, essentially just, like, climbed him like it was a TikTok video or something. I really did not understand that. And he didn't even, there was no foul call. The ref was right there. Obviously, the end of the game. But just talking Joe's overall game in this one, struggled a little bit to start. I think he actually maybe had a little all-star break rust, you know, missed a couple threes he typically knocks down. But, you know, typical Joe Harris on the other end, too. He just finds a way, knocks down a couple threes, and next thing you know, 3 of 9, really not that bad. I thought defensively he fought in this game, did a pretty good job on Jaylen Brown, had a nice deal on Jason Tatum in the fourth quarter. So if this is a bad game for Joe, I'll live with it every day of the week.
Yeah, he's had a steal and a block, and like you alluded to, Nick, I thought that he came up big in crucial sort of defensive plays. 12 points for him, 4 of 10 from the field, 3 of 9 from 3, including, you know, the old little buzzer beater there from Joey Buzzer, Joey Glass, or whatever the heck we're calling him now. He's got so much goddamn nicknames. It's lovely to see. But, yeah, Joe is not going to have a bad game because we sort of thought it's just like, oh, Joe is cold, Joe is cold, Joe is cold, Joe is cold. And then the second half happens. And that's what good players do. Like you sort of, when we talked about with Kyrie Irving here, it's the effort plays. It's the little things where you can still impact the game if your shot isn't falling. 3 of 9 from three for Joe Harris is an absolutely disgustingly bad night because he's the best goddamn shooter in the league. And this is going to make the percentages go down a little bit. But hopefully overall, we know he will bounce back there. But he just does everything else so well, you know, to against Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, who have immense athleticism in so many different spans. Like, they are going to be the next Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And Joe Harris, who is just the dude who just does everything that we know he has to do. Gets his hands in the right spot, gets his stance right, shows strength, shows good core strength, shows good lower body and low center of gravity. Can't ask much more from Joe Harris, Nick, and I ask the world of him, and he gives me all that and more.
Yeah, also, he had a really nice verticality play on Jaylen Brown in this one. Just like Jaylen went straight at his chest, Joe was right there straight up. Jaylen ended up missing the layup. So credit to Joe Harris, like you said, Jack, finding ways to impact the game even when the three-point ball is not falling at the same rate.
Can I touch on that verticality thing, Nick? Because it's something I've realized in the, I guess, the inception and growth of this book on Nets team. It seemed to be that, you know, it was almost like the number one defensive thing that they were taught. You know, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, whoever else it is. Now, obviously, all the other guys in the roster have been to their other varying different situations. But Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, these guys that are still there from, you know, the old Brooklyn days, they have the fundamentals so sound because they were just so well coached in so many different ways. And Joe obviously has alluded to that in terms of the individualized, you know, attention that he did get, you know, up to, you know, to today. I think that that's one thing that these Nets players, and I think Joe Harris, Jared Allen did it so well. Nicholas Claxton does it quite well also. He did it quite well against San Antonio. I did notice those verticality plays. Just something I wanted to touch on. I think he deserves some love for, like, and really good for you for highlighting it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, probably credit to Kenny Atkinson, right? Like, that's probably who implemented to these
guys. Why that man, Atlanta? Bring him back. Bring him back to Atlanta.
I mean, like, all the guys you mentioned, he coached hard. You know, he coached them at an early phase in their career, really probably hit home. And I think also, like, those early Nets teams had some foul trouble. So easy way for a coach, you know, keep those hands up. The refs can't call you for a swipe and if your hands are showcased. So credit to Kenny there. And like you said, it's a good quality to have.
Definitely. Absolutely. Nick, is there anything else you wanted to touch on, I guess, within this game? In terms of, you know, any sort of X's and O's before, I guess, we touch a little bit on Blake and Kevin Durant's status.
I mean, we kind of touched on everybody. I guess I'll run through real quick. We mentioned Bruce Brown, struggled a little bit with his floater tonight. DJ kind of got exposed in some situations here. You know, Celtics, nice passing team, and obviously got some of the switches they wanted. Dropping maybe a little bit too much in certain situations too. Tyler Johnson kind of did his normal thing. You know, nice to see Jeff Green back out there. A little bit hesitant on the three-point shot, maybe something to do with the shoulder. He did airball his first attempt, finished 2-for-4. Almost, you know, put a nasty poster down on Grant Williams in this one too. But overall, I thought, you know, a lot of guys played solid. James Harden also had a rough game here. We kind of touched on that early on.
One thing we'll touch on as well, because it was a stat that I sort of brought out a day or two ago about the Nets assists. You know, second in the league for assists, over 27. Have had a couple of games, 35-plus as well. Tonight, only 22. Only 21. So I think that that's where I know you put out, or someone put out a clip where the ball was just moving and fizzing and, you know, breaking down the zone and breaking down the defense of the Boston Celtics. I don't think we saw that enough tonight, and I think that's why the Nets did struggle offensively.
Yeah, and I think part of that's like what we mentioned earlier, Jack, with the Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan thing. Gets a little congested. Boston's a good defensive team. I thought they did well playing the passing lanes. I want to say the Nets had 11 first-half turnovers in this one, finished with 14, I believe. So the way they were able to clean that up in the second half was a big part in this one. Also, something else that stuck out in this one too, Jack, 11 offensive rebounds for both teams, but the Nets had 28 second-chance points. The Celtics only had 18.
I think that that's what separates you from being, like, you know, a really, really good team that's on the come up. Can you do those little things that can take you from being good to great? And the Nets are doing those little things, Nick. You know, they're being smart. They're showing effort. It's sort of a tone setter. It's a culture setter in so many different ways. It's the championship habits that KD spoke about in yesteryear. And yeah, I think that all those things, and, you know, James Harden had 6 first half turnovers, only finished with 7. You know, that from him is just like, you know what? I got to clean this shit up. You probably heard it. He probably was chatting to KD. KD had the paper out in front of him at one point during the game. It's like, I don't really like some of these stats. And you can probably tell, you know, and it's always just awesome seeing KD. TLC looked kind of nice as well. And Blake Griffin. Sweater game was strong, Nick. For anyone who didn't see it, check out the Brooklyn Nets Twitter and Facebook. The sweater game from Mr. Blake Griffin, I mean, I'm going to be wearing my jerseys probably on the next one and during the next games because, man, I just like the swag. I like the drip. It looks good. Yeah.
They on the Yes broadcast, they did some quick research. I believe the sweater costs $800 if you want to grab one, Jax.
Okay. So. Maybe. Well, I'll have a chat to Blue Wire, see what that pays like.
And just another, I guess one more note on the game. The Nets defense actually wasn't too bad in this one. 3 out of the 4 quarters held Boston under 30 points. You know, only in that third quarter they scored 31, first quarter 29, quarter 2 26, quarter 4 23. Really locked it down in the fourth, you know, 33-23. That's what you like to see from great teams.
And look, the Nets, we've seen stats aplenty about it. You can find any stat that just shows now that they are performing defensively when it does matter. And you don't need stats to necessarily tell you that. You can watch the game. You can listen to what Nick just alluded to. And I think it also was, that's where I initially, and again, this was games and games and games ago. It was eons ago, but it also wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things. That the game, the second game of the season against the Boston Celtics, was when we sort of saw the Brooklyn Nets turn up the defense a little bit and go, yep, you know what? We can kind of do this. We can do this when we need to. And I think that the Celtics, to that extent, don't have the offensive dynamism that the Nets do to be able to go, man, team's locking in here. We need to try and get some buckets. And Jason Tatum is a great shot creator. Jaylen Brown wasn't feeling it tonight, as you alluded to. And outside of that, you know, Kemba's doing all right. But, you know, I'd rather have
He had 3 points in the last three quarters of this game.
Look, my slander will be, I prefer just loving my own team than throwing slander out there, though. Don't check my timeline.
Never slander from you, never.
No, actually, funnily enough, in general, Nick, we're seeing the Nets get a lot more hate in general. And part of it is a good thing because people hate, you know, dominance. People hate, you know, dynasties, all this sort of thing. And the Nets are far from being that. It is good to kind of get it a little bit. But I'm almost, and I think John did a nice tweet from OTGBasketball.com, sort of being like, you know what? I don't really care about the rest of the league. I want to see everyone do well, whether it's the Knicks, whether it's the Celtics or whatever, because good basketball, it just makes it more fun when you beat the best version of something, the best version of the Knicks, the best version of the Celtics, the best version of the Lakers. Kyrie wanted it. He wanted Anthony Davis out there that night. He wants, you know, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to be fit and healthy when it does matter. We want KD to come back and fit healthy because I think I'm more focused on and just more giddy about this Brooklyn Nets team. As I alluded to on the last fan pod, I'm enjoying this ride more so not because of all the outside and external BS. I'm just loving this Brooklyn Nets team, Nick. And that's where my focus and my love truly is. The haters, they can do their own thing. I might do a quote tweet here or there or reply here or there. Have some receipts every now and then. But for the most part, you look on my timeline, it's a lot of love.
Yeah, no, you got some positive vibes, Jack. I'm not going to throw too much shade at you. No, no, for real, though, I mean, there is plenty of hate on the Nets right now, and it's just fun to kind of enjoy the hate for the Nets and just kind of enjoy the ride, like you said. It's a pleasure watching this many talented players on a night-to-night basis, and we've kind of alluded to it before, like, there's a good chance this is going to be the best roster in Nets history. You know, if not this season, probably the next season. So just enjoy it while you can, because you never know how long this is going to last and what the outcome is going to be.
You got to enjoy the journey. I think that's the important part. You know, I'm starting to sound a bit like Kyrie. Maybe I've been rereading The Alchemist too many times. But yeah, you know, the every single game, you know, whether it's recapping it, whether it's just watching a highlight of Kyrie Irving, whether it's just looking at some of the reactions, the memes, the screenshots, it's all just fun in Brooklyn right now. And I think that joy is what's making it's rubbing off on me. You can tell that this team is wanting to play with joy. They're trying to establish their identity because there's a lot of, like, more national, more, you know, intelligent media pundits that are like, this should be a villain team. Why aren't they a villain team? It's because they cultivate joy, Nick. They can't help it. Kyrie Irving does it. All these hugs. James Harden with these smiles. Claxton with the infectious energy. Bruce Brown is the most number one loved player in the league. You know, they should be the villain. They haven't done anything that's deserved to be the villain just yet. You've got to win to really earn that villain mentality, whether you're Golden State, Miami Heat, or whatever. But, you know, just the collective makeup, they should be. But they have just too many joyous elements to detract from that.
Yeah, it's like they have a nice balance of players, too. You know what I mean? There's, like, not just the stars, there are the other good role players that people just love. Like you said, a Bruce Brown, a Joe Harris, even a young Nick Claxton. Like, it's just like there's a different element to this Nets team. And obviously, we're going to be biased because we follow them so closely. But it is something, like you said, brought up by national media.
it's something that we'll certainly be keeping an eye on, because I think that the narrative for this team, it's interesting. It's just fascinating to look at it from a fan perspective, because we're so deep in it. You know, we're not lucky enough to, you know, be at the games and, you know, be at the post-media conferences and stuff, but we're pretty deep in it. We're watching all the games. We're looking at all the comments and such. But Nick, in saying that, I guess we should move to two of our other stars, in Kevin Durant and Blake Griffin. We'd heard from Steve Nash today say that Kevin is getting better all the time and has a scan next week. We will assess him then, but he hasn't played in a month, basically. So no matter what the scan says, he will have an appropriate ramp up, and we put him in a position to finish the season strong. Worried at all about the fact that we still don't have necessarily a firm timeline on KD's return?
I'm not necessarily worried. Like, there's still a substantial amount of time for him to come back and then still get into a groove and get ready for the postseason. I think, you know, it gets more concerning is, like, you'd like to see him back sooner than later so you can build up that chemistry and things can be as smooth as possible going into the postseason. Like we mentioned, though, if there's one type of injury you really want to play it safe with, it's that hamstring. You know, it's those tendons, those things that, you know, if they're damaged, it's really easy to damage them again. So I think the Nets are just being ultra conservative with this situation, and given what they have, and they're almost in the one seed right now, a half game back, and KD's only played 18 games, you know, why rush it? Until there's more alarm, or it goes, if we don't get good news by the end of March, then I'll be concerned. Like, I feel like by the end of March, we should have a better idea of, like, hey, this is going to be an idea of his return date, or hey, now he's getting that full ramp up back to basketball activities. If he's still out to that point, Jack, then you know what? Then I'm like, okay, this is maybe a tad worrisome.
Yeah, man, you've clearly not been on Nets Facebook, Nick, because the Nets now have a big two, apparently, according to some people on those Facebook pages. I don't know why I'm on them. But sometimes it's a bit of a laugh.
It's some balance, but just to get you the weirdest end of the spectrum.
Why not? Why not? And just to finish off the comment that Steve Nash did provide, he said that, I think when we got the second scan, we knew this was going to be longer. The first scan, there was bleeding and the imaging wasn't as clear. We realized with the second scan, this was the type of timeline we're looking at. And we'll see. That can change. We're expecting the potential for this to be a month. Most hamstring injuries, you know, they're quite common injuries, especially in the sport that I follow, in the AFL. They generally are a month injury. And for a guy coming off an Achilles who's going to have, you know, some weaknesses around a lot of those muscles that you and tendons that you're alluding to there, Nick, it's always best to play it safe. And while I'm not necessarily worried about his chemistry, I'm worried about his conditioning and just, you know, him getting the reps needed individually, because, like I've said on many occasions, one of KD's best attributes, and there are a lot of goddamn good attributes for one of the best players we've ever seen, is his ability to just fit in everywhere, defensively, offensively, wherever it is. Kevin Durant fills those gaps and makes them strengths. He makes the weaknesses strengths. He makes the strengths super strengths. So I'm more worried, not worried just yet, but my concerns lie more in relation to his individual conditioning and his individual reps, because we always see when he comes back from a game, he always starts a quarter a little bit rusty, as the Nets did a little bit tonight, and that's happened. But then by the end of the game, he's gone, you know, 50% from the field or whatever. But I just want KD to get the requisite reps, and that ultimately, as long as he's fit and firing for the playoffs, I wish I had a crystal ball to just be able to see that, so I have that peace of mind, and so does he, as well as the team in general. But I'm fine with it right now, as long as, you know, the bleeding doesn't continue. And we're sort of seeing, I guess, a similar sort of cautious approach with Blake Griffin too.
Yeah, no, 100%, Jack. And like you said, there's no need to rush. And obviously these type of injuries do last a long time, because you want them to be 100%, because you don't want him to re-injure it in, you know, the game 7 of, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals or something like that. You want him to be 100%. So take the slow approach, and long as he's feeling okay. I will say, seeing him on the bench, he definitely looks like a little bit more annoyed that he's not playing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's definitely like a little salty almost, like, oh man, I want to be out there. So I'm sure he's not too happy about it, but it is what it is.
And again, just to add in the further comments from Steve Nash, he's been on the court. He's been doing a lot of work and just making sure that he has the appropriate healing response in the window that we've had here. He had the 2 weeks in the scan, 2 weeks in the scan, and it's progressing in the right direction. That's the number one thing. Then two, it's fully healed, and how much more can we predict he has to go for it to be healed? He's already on the court working individually, putting himself in a position to escalate that ramp up whenever the scan gives us the appropriate info. So I guess there's some peace of mind knowing that, you know, his conditioning and, you know, his on-court work isn't being affected. Hopefully just the next scan we get, fingers and toes crossed, it's a good one.
Yeah, and obviously I would assume that it's somewhat positive in the sense that, like you said, Jack, he's still doing some training. I think it's just not 5-on-5. It's just like
not
that.
Not full court, yeah.
Yeah, not full court. So that's good. You know what I mean? If that were to be like, oh, now he's not doing anything, then we'd be concerned. But you mentioned Blake Griffin. Obviously, they're trying to get him ramped up because he's been sitting out so long with Detroit because they were looking for a solution to the contract situation. Obviously, ended up signing with the Nets. When do you think we'll see him, Jack?
Look, it seemed to me it was cool to see him on that video on the Brooklyn Nets Twitter page. You know, yep. It's still a bit surreal having, you know, a guy that we've always loved just as a player in general on the Brooklyn Nets. But it seems to me he said he's not injured. He's not injured at all. It's clearly conditioning. It's clearly the reps that he needs to get in. And we can blame Detroit for a little bit of that. But also at the same time, it probably allowed us to get the buyout and get him there on the cheap. So, look. There's also TLC out, and look, I think just adding to the rotation, just adding healthy bodies is only going to make this team better. And look, I think he could be back soon. Blake Griffin, when will we see him, Nick? Good question. Maybe the road trip, if not maybe after the road trip. I think that I'm really eager to sort of see him just because, again, as I alluded to, it's just always been a bit of a fave of mine and want to see him in the short role. We've sort of heard his role described, everything that we sort of thought it would be. Steve Nash was clearly talking about in that coffee catch-up with BG. So, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that he'll be back sooner rather than later? Do you think it's... Well, what's your timeline if you're Steve Nash and you're the physician?
I feel like you probably want at least a week of conditioning. You know what I mean? You're not going to magically be ready, I think, for Saturday night's game against Detroit. I could be wrong because maybe that's about a week, but it seems more likely we see him against the Knicks or even Wednesday against the Pacers.
Well, that'd be a good one. And hopefully Caris LeVert's back then. He won't be, obviously, but it's good to sort of see
where we got actually, the... I think there was like some small rumblings that Caris LeVert could be back very, very soon. And some people looked at that being, you know, a possible return date.
Yeah, I don't know if your heart's going to be able to handle if his first game happens. It's like, you know, how Jared Allen's first. It would be pretty goddamn poetic in a lot of ways because we love Caris LeVert. And it's just so damn awesome to hear that news about him. We're always going to bring up news relating to him and Jared Allen on this pod because the Brooklyn Buzz loves those two more than many, many, many players in this league. So a shout out to them. It was also cool to sort of see Blake chat and sort of mention that KD was like the biggest recruit. I'm like,
yep.
You used to play with DeAndre Jordan, but then DeAndre Jordan's like, yeah, he like kicked our ass the last time we played. I'm not talking to him. And I just thought that was pretty funny too.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. KD was the biggest recruiter. And obviously KD watches a lot of basketball. So there was probably an aspect of his game that he thought could really benefit the Nets, even to an extent. If, you know, Blake Griffin's in the starting lineup over Bruce Brown or DeAndre Jordan tonight, he provides something a little bit different. You know what I mean? Then what DJ and Bruce Brown provide offensively, because he does have that 3-point shot. Not to say that he should be starting or anything, but just another possible front court option for Steve Nash.
Definitely. You know, it's something that, and look, this is basically what Steve Nash said. So we'll expect Blake is a small ball five who can make open threes. He's really good in the half role playmaking, playing 4-on-3, 3-on-2, 2-on-1 situations. He's an intelligent player, has great experience and IQ. So, look, it's something that we no doubt we'll see how it all pans out. But I think that it's going to be exciting, Nick, because there's just so many elements of this team that we love. And adding another one to it, sort of, there's little to no pressure. Again, check out the pod. Nick and I really dive deep into this on the mailbag episode when we first heard about the signing. So I just can't wait to see him out there, Nick.
Yeah, and then we can really dive deep on what he actually looks like from a health perspective and just like a mobility perspective and what he provides for this team. I think it's intriguing just because we really have no idea and what his motivation level was and what the pieces like around him were in Detroit in terms of his level of success. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some type of turnaround. Like you said, we mentioned that show, and we'll be sure to talk about Blake a lot moving forward because there is a chance that he could have a nice impact on this team, or a chance it might not be much of anything.
Who knows? We'll have to see it all, how it all pans out.
Yep, 100%. Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. And check us out on all streaming platforms.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.